Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hi, I'm Ella Jean Ehrlich.
I'm John McEnroe.
I'm Bjorn Borg.
I'm Rosie.
This is Martina Navratilova.
This is Mark Forbes.
I'm Andy Murray.
You're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph and with Eurosport on day one, or at the very end of day one, of the 2018 Australian Open, a day where first and foremost we have to say our Kickstarter campaign to fund the podcast this year officially closed, and officially we are going to inform everyone one more time how overwhelmed and bowled over and delighted and wonderful you all are that we are. It's just, I mean, it's all of those things times a million, isn't it?
I know. We sit there watching all these pledges come in and some of the lovely notes that we've received as well. And I sometimes think, is that really for us? But anyway, I mean, really, it's lovely. And we'll stop saying it now. We'll get on with actually producing all these Grand Slam daily tennis podcasts that you've been basically chipping in for and hopefully do you proud.
Yeah, the Grand Slam dailies start here. Well, they kind of officially or unofficially started yesterday, didn't they, with a little bonus kind of review of what the players were saying on the eve of the tournament. But that all is ancient history now. The tournament is underway. And I promise you we will talk about tennis results in due course on this day one podcast. But first and foremost, there's kind of been a story which over the course of the day has gathered so much momentum that it's ended up overshadowing even the biggest upsets and the biggest excitement that we've had on the tennis court today, and that is the news that was broken by Mike Dixon of the Daily Mail overnight UK time, that at the ATP players meeting last Friday, so 4 days ago now, it's the only mandatory players meeting of the year on the ATP World Tour. They have other ones, but this is the only one that all players are required to attend. There were 150 of them there, everybody that's in town from the ATP as well. It was all proceeding as normal, and I should say this is how Mike Dixon reported it in the paper, and every source that I've spoken to, very reliable ones, have confirmed that this is absolutely bang on how it unfolded. And certainly Mike's, there's absolutely never any reason to doubt that these are the facts. So meeting proceeded as normal, and then as it was drawing to a close, I think they were just completing the question and answer section of proceedings. Novak Djokovic stands up and announces that he would like every non-player to leave the room, therefore all the ATP representatives, including Chris Kermode, lots of ATP dignitaries in that room that were requested to leave. He stood up, made a rousing speech alongside a lawyer that he'd brought into the room, trying to galvanise support for a breakaway movement from the ATP and the establishment of an official players' union, which, you know, you might say, well, the Association of Tennis Professionals, that's what the ATP is. Djokovic's argument is that the ATP as an association and as a representative of the players is compromised by the fact that it also represents the tournaments, and therefore, particularly in respect of prize money and the proportion of tournament income that goes into the prize money pot, he believes that the players are not being sufficiently advocated for by the ATP because they also are advocating for the tournaments, and those two things are in opposition. I believe, as I understand it, the other argument in favour, Novak Djokovic and his supporters, whoever they may be, believe there to be in favour of a bigger prize money pot, is they take issue with equal prize money for men and women. They essentially believe that the men's tour subsidises the women's at combined events. So the Grand Slams and the handful of events throughout the year where men and women play alongside one. Now, that has to be said, actually, outside the Slams, I don't think there are any events that pay equal prize money to men and women. But there you go. They believe that there is a certain level of subsidy going on. Mike Dixon reported that there is a certain level of support already amongst players. Gilles Simon is somebody who he reported is in support. Sasha Zverev as well, the younger of the Zverev brothers. It should be pointed out that Gilles Simon was not being drawn on it in his press conference earlier on today. He was pressed pretty hard and he didn't want to get dragged into any controversy at all. All he did was confirm that his views on equal prize money have not changed since he last reported on them 4 years ago.
He is the president of the Player Council at the ATP.
And what he said 4 years ago, which he confirmed today is still the case, is that he stands in firm opposition to equal prize money. So if that remains the case, it is a logical conclusion that he would be in support of this movement. It's going to be very interesting when Novak Djokovic plays his first round match tomorrow and comes into press and faces the inevitable barrage of questions. The ATP haven't released any official statement, word on the street, and again, it's only logical, is that they're not particularly happy about this. I mean, it's two fingers up to the ATP, really, isn't it, to say, can you get out of the room while we while we bitch about you behind your backs, please, and essentially set ourselves up in opposition to you. I mean, it's pretty dramatic kind of courtroom drama type stuff. I mean, by all accounts, it's a
bolt out of the blue, is what it is, because there wasn't any suggestion that we were moving along these lines. I mean, I think under the leadership of Chris Kermode, I'd say my view had always been that he is the most pro-player leader of the ATP that I have ever known, to be honest. And I know him pretty well personally from our days at Queen's. And I mean, he's always seemed incredibly popular with the players. I doubt if it's anything certainly personal along those lines. But
it may feel personal to him.
It may do. This is an age-old discussion point. This goes back to the very setup of the ATP being that partnership. You are always going to get the players in the tournaments having to kind of have this slightly uneasy agreement on where things should stand in terms of tournaments have to pay players. You know, that's just the way it works. And they're going to want to pay as little as possible within reason, and players are going to want as much as possible. That's just
But hey,
nature.
if we start down the path of trying to eliminate conflicts of interest within this sport, then this is going to be a long podcast.
Indeed. But there have been various situations like this over the years. I remember there was a talk of a breakaway union type situation back in the early
2000s. 2003, I believe. Yeah. Led by Wayne Ferreira, unsuccessfully.
Yeah. In addition to that, I remember a few years ago, Andy Roddick was saying that the fact is, for the amount of money that is raised overall at the Slams and how much they make, and the level of contribution that we have towards the success of those tournaments, we should be getting a bigger slice of the pie. Now, they have been getting one, a much bigger slice of the pie. Over the last few years, prize money has risen extremely since those conversations were had, but this would suggest that maybe players are still not happy.
It's interesting, isn't it? Quite often, when this debate rears its head, it is laced with the argument about the distribution of wealth and the distribution of prize money within tennis, and that it's too top heavy. And that, I think, is a far more sympathetic argument, as I understand it. You know, I was not at this meeting. Nobody apart from tennis players were. As I understand it, that was not one of the arguments given for this. It may very well be something that is cited as a reason for this, because I think PR-wise, that's an easier sell. I think multimillionaires asking for pay rises, whatever the basis of it, and I think you can probably gather what I think of the arguments made, or certainly one in particular. I don't need to point that out. Whatever you think of those arguments, multimillionaires asking for pay rises is a tough sell PR-wise.
Yes, I mean, Novak Djokovic has cleared more than $100 million in the course of his career. So, again, I don't know exactly what he said and exactly how he feels. We haven't had a chance to speak to him yet. Hopefully, he might elaborate tomorrow in the press conference and we might find out something about that. But, you know, I'm with you there. It has come a little out of the blue for me, this, and it's not the greatest start to a tournament of this type.
Does it smack of a man that's been sat on the sidelines for 6 months, twiddling his thumbs with a very, you know, active mind, you know, needing an outlet and needing something to engage his mind and his energies? You know,
an interesting one. Again, there was, you know, this is not what I would have expected to be hearing. And I'd kind of like to hear it from him directly.
It's going to be interesting to see how drawn he is on the topic, how prepared he is to speak about it, how candid he is prepared to be when he does speak about it. Because, as I say, up to this point, we've been deprived of a very much comment from ATP players, certainly on the record. So I think it's going to be standing room only in the Novak Djokovic press conference tomorrow. And we, as the giver of Grand Slam Daily podcast, we'll be here this time tomorrow, maybe a little bit earlier, maybe a little bit later, but around about this time tomorrow, to bring you up to date with it all, as David scurries away from me into the radio room to my left, because he has to be on air for BBC Radio 5 Live in about 4 seconds. So I will leave it there just for the moment, and we'll be back after David has done his very important broadcasting duties.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life, and of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
So with David back in position and with the small matter of the Djokovic revolt taken care of, we can now talk about some tennis.
Yay!
Tennis has been happening. And there's been no shortage of drama or stories or excitement on day one, it's fair to say.
The first 4 hours were amazing.
They really, really were. We will talk about Kyle Edmund and his victory over Kevin Anderson, but taking our British hats off, biggest story of the day, probably Belinda Bencic beating Venus Williams, although it's the shock that's not quite a shock, isn't it? I mean, for me, that's a Grand Slam semi-final.
Yes, it certainly is that, and you called it. I mean, you felt that Belinda Bencic would win, and I was less sure, but I was watching that on centre court at sort of court level height, and it was really striking to see the way Belinda Bencic was hitting the ball, the aggression that she was able to add to what her normal sort of court craft game. Goodness me, she was good. And it was difficult to work out how well or not Venus Williams was playing, because I didn't feel like she was having that much of a chance, really, to play her best tennis. Belinda Bencic was superb. I got to speak to her straight afterwards for Five Live, and it was quite nice. I've not really met her before, and just asked her, because her celebration was wild at the end. It was one of those where she's in utter disbelief, you know.
She has had a rocky old path. Yeah. There are parallels with Tanasi Kokkinakis, I think.
That's right. Shorter, but similar. You know, body kept breaking down.
Cumulatively, though, it's been rocky.
And that's what she was saying. You know, I've gone through a lot, really, physically, and I sense that it's probably been even worse than she was letting on, because there have been periods over the last 2 years where I've really wondered whether this woman is going to be able to come back.
Well, one of her injuries was a wrist injury, and that's the death knell for tennis players these days.
Yeah. So she was sensational, really, and she's through, and she could cut a real...
She's in my semi-final lineup, David.
Through the draw, I mean. She's in your semis?
She is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, we haven't actually compared our... picks, have we?
I know that after the podcast the other day, when you argued against my bold Kyle Edmund Kevin Anderson prediction, you then just in the nick of time to get the official predictions in, decided that you were persuaded my optimism about Kyle Edmund.
I must say, I think I was too hasty in my reaction, certainly, because when you said it was 50-50, I just felt on paper, how can the US Open runner-up and the 11th seed against Kyle Edmund, who hasn't done anything of that ilk, be 50-50? But I don't know, but when...
Yeah, but if it was all about on paper, there'd be no point in doing predictions, would it? We'd just put all 32 seeds through to round three and be done with it.
Look, I've said you were right. What more do you want? But the fact is, when thinking about how well Kyle Edmund had played in Brisbane and the kind of game that he's playing generally, I changed my mind, and I've got Kyle Edmund in the quarterfinals.
Me too.
Which we discovered later
on. It's
funny
how that happens shortly after I set my predictions through. Anyway, I mean, I know that sounds bold, but that is on the basis of the draw. Until I looked at the draw, I wasn't thinking Kyle Edmund quarterfinals. The draw is opening up sweetly for him, even more sweetly, because Jack Sock is out and Luca Puy has just lost
to Ruben Bemelmans.
That will come up in due course. But just quickly, on Kyle Edmund, it wasn't so much the victory. Yes, it's the biggest victory of his career, the 11th seed, Kevin Anderson. It was the manner of the victory. Without question, he would have lost that match. I mean, as little as 2 or 3 months ago, I think, maybe less. He was
biggest win of his career.
Two sets to one down. He lost that third set after losing concentration after a short rain delay. He was a breakdown in the fifth. I didn't think he was coming back from that. I didn't give him any hope at all, really. And he proved me wrong, and he showed some resilience that I've not seen before. And that's what
and
today was about for him.
Too.
Yeah.
He didn't go away. I mean, I think sometimes Kyle Edmund looks younger than he is on a tennis court, and sometimes at some point you have to win a match like that. That's what was going through my mind all the way through it, was yes, you're on the back foot, yes, this guy's playing well, but if you don't win one of these, you know, it's never going to happen.
No.
He's never going to take another step in his career, because, you know, you're going to find yourself in trouble sometimes and have to show what you're made of. And he really did today.
He did. He's got Dennis Istomin next. He has confirmed to me in an interview with Eurosport that he will be dressed as a Bassett's licorice all sort for that match as well. That was probably the best quotes from him were about the outfit that he was clad in by Nike, against his will.
If you haven't seen it.
Bassett's licorice all sort, bright, great, luminous pink and black in equal measure. I mean, thoroughly bizarre. He admits that luminous pink probably isn't his colour. And I'm not sure any pasty-skinned person can probably claim luminous pink to be their colour. I have to say, when Kyle came out with that in the press conference, I did look immediately over at you.
You did? I wonder what you were looking at me for.
I did, and you were laughing a laugh of solidarity.
I was. Freckle-faced wonders everywhere. Unite.
So that's Kyle Edmund. We could dwell on that for a long time, but there's just too much to talk about. How many Americans have lost today, David?
Well,
it's 10 so far, and there are two in the process of losing.
Irina Falcone's about to be dumped
Joe
out.
Joe Wilfried Tsonga is serving for a two-set lead over Kevin King of the
12,
States.
Then,
and Daria Gavrilova is serving for the match against Irina Falcone of the States. So two have gone through. They are Ryan Harrison and Mackenzie McDonald.
I think three have gone through.
Who's
now?
The third?
Yeah, there was one that I've never heard of. But there was definitely three.
Plenty that we have heard of have gone out.
Yeah.
Sloane Stephens.
It's incredible.
An
upset
that's not an upset. I mean,
no,
very much on paper.
No, but she won the first set, Stephens, and we were monitoring that match. And then the second set, she was serving for the match, or she was at least very close to winning the match in two. Lost the second set to Zhang Shuai, who showed some great stickability there. But the third set, it was just drifted away.
It was difficult to watch.
Yeah, it was a tough
watch.
And
it was,
maybe she was hurting. I didn't see her press conference today, but it was a disappointment.
I don't think she's claimed to be hurting. And I'm not sure she said very much at all.
Jack
but...
Sox was disappointing too. I mean, he was 6-1, 4-1 down at one stage against, you know, a good player from Japan in
an
Sugita,
interesting footnote to that loss, and I'm not suggesting for a moment he didn't give his best effort today, but something that we've not had chance to mention, just a little storyline, is that Auckland are planning on revoking or are going to try to revoke their $100,000 appearance fee paid to Jack Sock because they believe he didn't give his best effort in his first round loss there, which is something I've never heard of before.
I've heard of it once with, believe it or not, our good friend Goran Ivanisevic at a tournament in about 1999 in Ostrava. And
were they successful? I guess if you got it in the small print of the contract that we reserve the right to to argue it.
Well, you see, all I remember from it was the tournament director making a big song and dance about the way Goran had performed and Goran being told that they've said they're not going to pay your fee. And he said, they have to pay.
No one's arguing with that. So Jack Sock, one of the... it's not quite 12 yet, but I feel pretty confident looking at the scoreboards behind me, it is going to be 12.
Yeah, and we've got a lot of American listeners, and I don't want to look as though we're taking glee at your,
no,
your disappointment.
No, absolutely.
But
it is shock, isn't it? Can you think of... not that this is a statistic that anyone has to hand, but anecdotally, I can't think of a nation losing that many players on a single day of a tournament. That has to be a record or close to it.
You know, a nation of that strength normally. John Isner is another one that lost heavily. I went to his press conference.
Matt Ebden, didn't he?
He said, I felt flat out there and I just couldn't get anything going.
Coco Vandeweghe. Now, Pat Cash has tweeted that she's been suffering with the flu. And has been really struggling with her preparations. I don't doubt that that's the truth. However, she didn't behave well. She did. I know you like aggro, David, but there was an awful lot of aggro today.
Oh yeah, she got a point penalty for a back-to-back. I think time violation for eating her banana too slowly and then smashing her racket.
I thought she received a point penalty for audible obscenities directed at her opponent.
Oh, my goodness.
That's what I had read.
Blimey.
We will confirm, listeners. We will confirm the exact reason. I can definitely confirm the banana incident because Mary Carrillo told me about it. Bumped into her finally in the broadcast compound and she said, did you just see the banana incident? No, I hadn't seen the banana incident. I have now. And Coco Vandeweghe had quite an extensive discussion with the umpire about how she didn't care whether it was a time violation. She was going to damn well sit there and finish her banana. So, Coco Vandeweghe, ladies and gentlemen.
I wish I'd known about her flu before I put her in my quarterfinals.
Oh, dear, oh, dear.
It's not gone very well, has it?
She wasn't in my quarterfinals.
Oh, dear.
What else has happened today, David?
Well, what else have we spoken
Rafael
about already?
Rafael Nadal.
This is the thing.
Delivered a bruising.
It was a day of such halves, wasn't it? Because all of these struggles for Venus Williams, Sloane Stephens, all of these other big names. And then in the evening session, Nadal.
And then all of a sudden, you had three screens adjacent in the media cafe. One showing Nadal absolutely bulldozing his way through Victor Estrella Burgos, who was celebrating winning individual points out there. You had one showing Caroline Wozniacki bulldozing her way through her first rounder, and you had one showing Nick Kyrgios making very light work of Brazilian Duke de Silva. So night session has been not a damp squib, because watching Nadal in his vicious pomp is quite something, but competitiveness and stories wise, yeah, a damp squib.
Yeah, it was noticeable that there was still a lot of excitement in the Rod Laver Arena because people were getting to see Nadal incidentally in the sleeveless shirt, which we haven't seen.
There had been speculation and rumour, hadn't there, that it would be making a comeback.
Do you like the sleeveless shirt? You don't usually comment on outfits, but what do you think?
I don't feel great about seeing armpit hair.
Yeah, but it's Nadal's guns, isn't it?
Well, yeah, I mean, I can... yeah, fine. I mean,
he's like one of the blokes that can actually pull that off.
It's a bit obvious, isn't it? I mean, yeah, I'm not saying he can't pull it off. I just don't enjoy being distracted in my tennis watching by armpit hair.
Okay. Catherine.
David Law obviously
finding
does.
Finding out something I didn't know.
Yelena Ostapenko won today against Francesca Schiavone, who was wearing a back brace.
I saw that.
During the match.
Yes, I saw that. And actually...
I mean, externally, outside of her clothing, she was wearing a full torso back brace.
No, I saw that. 20 years of age, Yelena Ostapenko against 37-year-old Francesca Schiavone, two French Open champions. You couldn't get two more different ones, could you? One's sending off bazookas down the other end, and the other one's coming back with a pea shooter. But yeah, that's the sort of game style we had. But it was quite good fun to watch. But Ostapenko, the other thing was really nice. I think probably the first time she's been on the Rod Laver Arena, and she was really warmly welcomed and received by the crowd. I think that is a relationship that could really blossom.
And she's got her face on a stamp in Latvia.
Oh.
And they made a run of 55,000 of them, and they all sold out within a day. I mean, I don't know what average stamp sales are in a day in Latvia, but she seemed pretty pleased with that. Anyway, mixed fortunes for home favourites today. Home Australia, home. Sam Stosur, another first-round loss to Monica Puig. Did she have match point? I think she might have.
I don't know whether she did.
I think she might have had match point. 8-6. She was a set-up. She lost the second set tiebreak, 8-6, and she lost 6-4 in the third. And your heart just breaks for her.
She was set and 4-2 up.
Yeah.
I mean, and she was playing beautifully. And it's just...
Just,
every year we have this conversation about Sam Stosur on the first day.
I know. Yeah, but we are watching Daria Gavrilova performing her winner's interview on Rod Laver Arena. Yeah. So that's been good. Nick Kyrgios was awesome.
Yeah, he was good.
And somehow I found myself predicting him to reach the final. So I was pleased to see him perform that well. Again, I didn't think I was going to before I went through the draw. And then somehow, on the basis of the matchups, I had him getting there. Now, I still fear that his body will prevent him from getting there, but it's very different in predictions to sort of say, oh, well, he's going to be injured for that one, so he's not going to be able to do his best. So, and the more quick matches like tonight that he can have, the more likely it is to come to fruition. Kyrgios against Federer.
Who's winning the title?
I've Federer.
Okay, what about the women?
I've got a Zverev, Federer, and a Nadal Kyrgios semi final lineup.
Well, that'd do.
Yeah. I mean, you know, every time on Twitter when you do a predictions pole vault and you always write head, not heart.
Yes.
It is impossible to completely separate those two things. Even if one thinks one is doing that, it is impossible. Hence my men's semi-final lineup.
Well, I disagree. I think it's perfectly possible. If you've
anything
just got
else
the control
to report,
Marin
Cilic was cruising.
Yeah.
And then lost the third to Vasek Pospisil. I have to say yes now, so yes.
Yes, so Marin Cilic won. Yes, you said that right. I've got a semi-final lineup of Nadal against Kyrgios and Zverev against Federer.
Are you kidding?
No. I've got a final of Nadal against Federer.
That is blooming ridiculous.
I do have a final of Nadal against Federer, and Nadal wins the title.
I'm regretting copying you in on my predictions sent through last night.
And
Dominika Sabalkova, she's lost today.
Hold on a minute. Dominika Sabalkova lost today, yeah. But I've got Halep against Garcia in the semis and Gerges against Wozniacki with a Halep-Gerges final and a Halep title.
It's funny that. I've got a Halep title.
Well.
This is... Right.
This, how annoying.
This, there'll be an independent review of this. Denis Shapovalov won the battle. It wasn't really a battle in the end. 1-3-6 against Stefanos Tsitsipas. David is looking very much like he might have to jog away somewhere.
He's got to go and speak to the nation.
His knee is twitching. I'm sensing David Law is a limited time only offer at the moment. So, just to wrap up, other notable victories. Svitolina is through. She cruised. Borna Coric went out to John Millman. He just can't find it, Borna Coric, can he?
No, he's struggling.
And anything else to report, David? Anything else?
I don't think so, but I've quite enjoyed day one. It's been a bit long. You sort of have to get a bit hardened to these Grand Slam days, don't you?
Shall I tell you what's coming up on day two?
Oh, yeah, you do that.
Veronica, what do you mean you do that? Does that mean you're...
Yeah, I'm off.
He's running
See
away. What you're going to get now is Catherine Whittaker reads the order of play to herself. Veronica Cepeda-Roig against Karolina Pliskova. First up on the Rod Laver Arena, Alex Zverev against Thomas Fabiano, then Simona Halep against Destiny Ayeva, and then in the night session, Aliash Bednay, formerly of Great Britain, against Roger Federer, and Ash Barty against Aryna Sabalenka. Picks of matches elsewhere, you probably have to go for Maria against Sharapova. Yes, you heard me right. Tatiana Maria of Germany takes on unseeded Maria Sharapova. Then you have Djokovic against Donald Young, following that on the Margaret Court Arena. Plenty of intrigue around Djokovic, both on and off the court. Muguruza on Margaret Court. And then, I like the look of this one, Francis Tiafoe against Juan Martín Del Potro. And just to mention four, Joe Konta, who kicks things off on the High Sense Arena. As David Law sits back down, having missed my lovely monologue,
he gets
to sail in and comment on Joe Konta against Madison Brengel, followed by the inter-Germanic clash between Angelique Kerber and Annalena Friedsam.
Yeah.
And then we have Wawrinka against Ricardis Berankis, and Burdick against Dominauer on High Sense Arena.
What do you think? What have you got for that?
Burdick Dominauer.
Yeah, I'm gonna go Burdick.
Yeah, four sets, Burdick, is what I'm going to go. Wawrinka, I mean, due respect to Ricardis Berankis, that is as soft a draw as you
it's
can
not
probably...
A bad draw,
it's a great draw,
but
if he can't muster a challenge there, we really know where he's at.
I just don't think Stan's ready, personally, no. But we'll find out.
I agree with you. And then, I mean, you can look at the order of play yourself, and you actually can now, because they fixed the app and the website.
Awesome.
That was another big story on day one of the Australian Open, that nobody could find out what the scores were, because everything was broken. But anyway, it's all fixed. Well done, them. And I think that does just about bring to an end this whirlwind tour of day one at the Australian Open. We hope we've kept you up to date, I think, with the main stories and the results. If we've missed anything, I'm sure you'll let us know on Twitter. But for now, we have been the Tennis Podcast, brought to you in association with The Telegraph, with Eurosport, with La Manga, brackets, responsible for my excellent forehand, with Triple S, with Melanie Bowes, with TennisBalls.com, I'm with Charlie the Ferret. See you tomorrow.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.